Now we're taking up the issue of Halach Ma'anya. Now it's been pointed out, we raised some issues pertaining to Halach Ma'anya. The fact that the matzah is depicted over here as being the bread of affliction. At the same time, it's supposed to be the bread of freedom. So we gave an explanation about that. What's interesting also is that it's in Aramaic, as opposed to the rest of the Haggadah, which is in Hebrew. Which is interesting because it would appear that the intention was that the Haggadah should be in Hebrew. If that's the case, why is Halach Ma'anya in Babylonian? Aramaic, rather. Or, you know, if it's Aramaic, so the whole thing. What's the... It's always a question when it's not consistent. I'm not really sure how to answer the question, but I'm just going to posit something, suggest something. I made the point a number of years ago, and I just saw in the new Haggadah that's come out that we're using with the Rav's material that he makes the same point. The point that I made is, if you take a look at the Halach Ma'anya, there's something that's very, very strange. There's a lot of things that are strange in the Halach Ma'anya. We've already noted the difference between the explanation of matzah given in Halach Ma'anya and the one that we say later on. Whoever did not say these three things, you know, peta matzah shana wachman, we because of the haste of the redemption. Okay, so we tried to give an explanation. Then the it mentions that whoever is hungry should come and eat, called the tzrich yaseh v'yifsach, and whoever is in need of the material things that he would need for Pesach to fulfill the mitzvot, it would seem to me that's what it's talking about, should come and observe Pesach with us. How many people raise the question on this? It would seem that this is an invitation to join. That's very, very important, by the way. And that is, at this point, you can explain, and you can bring in the Rambam in Hilchos Yom Tov. It's very pertinent. The Rambam in Hilchos Yom Tov, in Perik Vav of Hilchos Yom Tov, the Rambam talks about the proper observance of Yom Tov, how a person should observe it. And basically, there's a chiyuv on the man, the chayev adam lios ben sameach v'tov lev, that a person is obligated to be happy, tov lev. It's interesting because most people don't look at that as something which you can establish as an obligation. You know, you can't command a person to be happy. If he's happy, the person's happy. You don't have to command him. And if he's not, so how can you command him? It presupposes that it's something which is in your control to just be happy. But basically, it has an objective character to it. That's the way the halacha works. There are certain actions that a person does which expresses happiness. Eating fine foods, so that's misameach. He's misameach. He eats meat, drinks wine. Now, of course, there's a kiyum, that is the inner happiness. So the mitzvah commands you to engage in certain actions whose character is that they are joyful. And now, the fulfillment, to what extent you actually experience the joy in your heart, that's definitely the key in belayv, but that of course is up to the individual. Now, to a certain extent, you can. The Torah does believe that man is not a victim, should not be enslaved, should not be a victim just to his emotional state or even to his mood. What if I'm in a bad mood? Well, okay. So, but the Torah doesn't maintain that you should have to be captured by the mood. There's ways to get yourself out of the bad mood. So there's a lot of things that practical consequences as far as this is concerned, as we've said. That is, you can choose to engage in a conversation with someone or to rebuke a person, which is going to cause a lot of anxiety and anguish. So that would be a violation, and to do so on Yom Tov. So there's a lot of things that are in your control. You could take up certain things. There's a time and a place. There's certain things that have to be discussed, but they're going to involve a certain amount of tension. So you don't have to bring them up on Yom Tov. There are things that you can even before Yom Tov, on Erev Yom Tov, for example, the same is true. You can have arguments, you can have discussion, and it's going to put you in a mood, and it's going to spoil your Yom Tov, so therefore you're not allowed to do it. You have to anticipate. The Gemara talks in about departing on a sea journey for three days within Shabbos. Well, in those days, it was very harrowing, and you won't be settled. So Shabbos comes, you'll be unsettled. So you're not allowed to do that because you're going to negate Onik Shabbos. So you see that concept of anticipation. So first and foremost, before the Yom Tov Shabbos and Yom Tov arises, the person has to be cognizant of this, not to engage in activities close to the Yom Tov, Erev Yom Tov, let's say, which are going to put him in a mood and it's going to affect his ability to enjoy the Yom Tov. Things come up, but you have to deal with them. I mean, you have to be reasonable about this kind of thing. Obviously, if somebody dies and the funeral is Friday or Erev Yom Tov, you have to attend and... that's it. Then you, but it still presupposes that a person should maintain a certain type of a discipline, and not allow himself to just be dominated by his emotions. He should make an effort, and there is such a thing as making an effort to fight off a bad mood and to put yourself into a good mood. So that to that extent, you'd be chayev to do so. But the Rambam says also. So there's an additional responsibility to include all those who are like dependent upon you, your wife, your family, your children, all those who are, you know, sort of living it under your control, management, whatever you want to say. So that's it says v'samachta b'chagecha. And then he says that this includes getting them things that they're going to enjoy. There's a chiyuv to get your wife a present and the children. You give them treats or presents, things that they'll appreciate to enhance the enjoyment of the Yom Tov. Ches, he adds another thing that ukeshu ochel v'shosa, when he eats and drinks, chayiv lahachil leger layasom v'lialmana. He's chayev to feed the stranger. The ger over here is the convert, the orphan and the widow. Im sha'ar ha'aniyim ha'omlalom. With the other downtrodden, the people who are downtrodden. So this is, interestingly enough, one wouldn't associate this with the idea of simcha. Everybody would say we have a responsibility to take care of the needy, the downtrodden, etc. But that's one thing. That's a responsibility. But then we go and celebrate. That's a separate thing. The two don't mix together. But now the Rambam is mentioning that the two go together over here. Aval Misha Noel Dulsos Chatzero, the one who closes the doors of his courtyard, the Ochel Vishosa Hu Vanav the Ishto, and he eats and drinks just with his own family, the Eno Machel Umashkel Aniyim, and he doesn't eat. Give food and drink to the poor, ulamare nefesh, and to the bitter. Those who, again, he keeps mentioning, it's not only the amount of money we're talking about, but there's a certain element of bitterness. There's a tragedy in a person being a poor person, as opposed to there's people that are wealthier and there are people that, you know, have less money, but that's not necessarily poor. That's what they make, and you know they live according to their means. But by poor, it means that they can't sustain themselves. They're dependent upon others. So that is a real source of bitterness. It's a tragedy. It's a human tragedy. There is an aspect of the Marei Nefesh that's a real tragedy. One could make a case. It's not a question of comparing which is the worst tragedy. But it's. I don't think people give it the... correct amount of recognition of what a tragedy is, because it's kind of a diminished existence. It's not like they're dead. That's, you know, a person had a life and died. Maybe the person died early. Okay, there's an element of tragedy in that. But there's a difference where the person is living, but living in a painful state, a diminished state psychologically, emotionally. Not just if a person has a handicap and has some physical pain, but the person learns how to deal with it, that's not necessarily a tragedy, because the person can deal with it. But this is a state in which the person is just bitter, feels compromised, that doesn't feel like a complete person. And, you know, like, always, you know, looking at others, that they're successful and I'm a failure. That sense of being a failure in life. That's part of the bitterness, I would imagine. It's not there are people that are wealthy and still feel inferior. That's a different kind of a thing. But they're able to get something out of life. I mean, that's just a person has a psychological issue. Why should he feel that way? And so on and so forth. But it's different. He derives a certain amount of success, achievement, and so forth. He has the ability to do so. But look, that's the way life is. If he's not satisfied and he can never be happy, that's a separate kind of problem. That's a different kind of an issue. That's not generic. That's not intrinsic to his condition. But in Ani, that's his basic description. A wealthy person may at times feel envious of somebody else, that he should work on that. But he goes around, he drives his car, and so forth. I mean, he has status. Let's put it a different way. He has a certain status. He's part of the social order. He gets a certain respect. But that, I would say, the Ani does not get that respect. Doesn't get any respect. Nobody really respects the Ani. It doesn't mean that you look down upon him, but there's a certain element of pitying him, and you could be very nice to him, but he doesn't get that kind of respect because he himself feels that he's looked down on, that he's not fully there, so to speak. So the idea of being a nothing, that's just the way most people are. That's the way you're going to feel. And that's why there's a certain bitterness. It's a certain bitterness that, because a person needs to have a certain feeling of success in life. What? Self-worth, success, and so forth. So there's a certain minimum point. Even if a person has a humble job, it's a job, whatever. I mean, there's some, that's it. He's doing his job and so forth. That's one level. But the Ani, the key over here is not just to give him the money, but to elevate his spirits, to make him feel good about himself. That's a very, very big mitzvah. You see? So the Rambam is saying that this is incorporated in the idea of enjoyment of the Yom Tov. And he says that a person who eats and drinks and just with his family and separates himself from the poor and those who are bitter, ein zu simchas mitzvah. This is not the simcha of mitzvah, el simchas kreso, but rather it's the simcha of the belly. So it's a lowly kind of simcha. Just like he's eating and drinking, it's an animalistic experience. As opposed to an experience which is based upon the fact that he did a mitzvah, that he fulfilled a great mitzvah, and he recognizes the higher purpose of the Jewish people and so forth, and he rises above his natural instincts. The natural instincts are just to enjoy myself, and he's able to stop and to act in an objective manner and help and lift people up. That's a simple shal mitzvah. Rambam says that simple kazu kolon, a simple like this is really degrading. It's a disgrace. In the Halach Ma'anya, it's very, very interesting. So we bring this point up. That is, this is a very good time. What we're saying is, whoever is hungry, let him come and eat. Well, why are we saying that? Why? It's true, it's good to feed the hungry, but what's the connection with what we're doing over here? Oh, the connection is because it's an expression of a fundamental obligation. You really can't engage in your own Seder, in your own Simchas Yom Tov, if you haven't taken this into consideration. But it's expressed in two. In other words, that the idea of simcha that we have must be connected to the idea of chesed that we have. But the chesed expresses itself in two ways, and it's a very interesting connection. The first way is talking about plain food, and the second one is talking about mitzvos. This is very, very important that we mention, in addition to the food, you mention the tzrich, the one who has need of things for the Yom Tov, to celebrate the Yom Tov, because you're talking about assisting him in terms of mitzvos, which is a very important idea, and that is that our chesed is a different kind of chesed. It's a chesed of Abraham. The chesed begins on a simple level by dealing with a person's basic needs. But it's not limited to that, because the ultimate chesed is to deal with the soul, to perfect him as an individual through mitzvah. So that's chesed too, to be makariv the person. So that's, and that's what better time, Yom Tov in general, because that's the time when you should be concerned about the needs of others that don't have, and specifically the Seder, because the whole institution of the Seder is to be makariv people, to teach them the foundations of Judaism. See more specifically how it's connected to the idea that we were slaves. We were slaves. The achala avasana bi'ara demitzrayim, it's the lach ma'anya, the bread of affliction, which is beginning to recount the idea that we were slaves. And we know that there's a mitzvah, the araisav is acharta ki eved ha'yisav b'mitzrayim. That there's another machayev over here. There's an additional machayev in the practice of chesed to those who are umlalim. Of course, it's the correct thing to do, of course, objectively, philosophically. But when you've been through that experience itself, it creates an additional obligation because you know what that's like. And you can't have that attitude of being haughty. You are in the same situation. So when a person experienced a certain... That is, some people aren't sensitive enough to certain types of sufferings. So you should strive, I mean, because sometimes it doesn't hit you. You don't get it. Sometimes it's forms of suffering do. You know, it hits you. You get it. But whenever you've been through something and you see somebody else, you can identify with that. The fact that we lived through that experience and we were Mari Nefesh and we were Umlalam and God redeemed us creates an additional chiyuv. That's the hallmark of the Jewish people, to practice a certain type of a chesed. To all people who are first and foremost to other Jews and to bring them in so they can keep the mitzvahs. We're connecting now the halach ma'anya, which is defining the concept of the matzah, and its connection to the mitzvah. That is, we're about to begin the Seder, the meal, and in order to qualify as a real seuda of Yom Tov, it has to incorporate the idea of chesed. And chesed is then broken down into two levels. First and foremost, the person's basic needs for food, and then for the mitzvahs. And a major cause of our obligation has to do with the fact that we experienced that state of enslavement, the bitterness, that's the maror. So as a result of that, we have to determine, we have to incorporate that sensitivity to that situation as well. I know everybody asks that it seems a little bit strange because you're sitting down to the Seder, so what kind of an invitation is this? Well, okay, it's a good point, but I mean, the real idea of the Seder is to teach. If we did it. If we didn't, we're becoming cognizant of the responsibility to do it. If it's possible, then you'll think to go ask somebody next door. You could still do that. You need, what's important over here is it's a teaching experience, that we elevate ourselves and we become cognizant of the idea. Whether we could do it right now, yeah. Well, maybe you'll say this, and a person will say, oh, by the way, you know, I just came on the way over here. I noticed somebody, and I'm not sure if they have a place to eat. Let's go and invite them. And even if not, well, you've learned the idea, and that's the beginning, that a person becomes a better person through studying the idea. And so next time you'll invite them. All right, we're just sort of digressing because we're taking up about the Kos of Eliyahu. And the Rav has commentary on this, that the four cups are associated with the four expressions of Geula, which is Vahotseisi, I'll take you out from under the burdens of Egypt. V'itzalti, and I will save you from their bondage. V'ga'alti, I will redeem you. And v'lakachti, I will take you to me for a people. And I will be to you a God. Then the next part is v'hevesi, then I'll bring you to the land. So apparently v'hevesi, the bringing of the Jews to the land, is not considered to be one of the four expressions of Geula, and thus it's not a fifth cup. You don't have a fifth cup, you only have four cups. The hevesi is connected with the Kos of Eliyahu, because the Kos of Eliyahu corresponds, he's saying, to the haftacha of the hevesi. Because That has to do with the possession of Eretz Yisrael. And now we're in Golis. We don't have it. And the one of the ideas at the Seder is that where the last part of the Seder, the halal, is for the future Geula. And in other words, you can't really have a Seder unless you affirm the idea of the future Geula. Now, I want to connect it with the Halach Manya. I don't want to miss out on this point, because we were talking about the fact that it's written in Aramaic. In that, you see, it also says in Halach Manya that Hashata Hacha, now we are here. What's the point of that? Meaning, now we're in Chutz Laretz. And then it says Hashata Avde. Now we are slaves, which is also strange. What do you mean, what were the slaves? In what sense are we slaves? But nevertheless, the idea is that the particular Seder that we observe is observed from the standpoint of people who are exiled, who are in Golis. It's not identical. It's a different phenomenon as to when the Jews are secure in their land. And when it's a different situation. And of course, most of the things we would do would be the same, and so on and so forth. But there's something strange. In other words, you're telling the story about freedom and all of that, but in point of fact, we're really not there. That's a sort of like an elephant in the room situation. And nevertheless, you have to tell the story of you know, CPT Mitzrayim and the Geula and the joy and all of that. And it seems it's at first glance to contradict. Because we're saying that a person's obliged to view it as though he went left Egypt and he became a Ben Choron and he's a free person, and yet here we're saying that we're slaves. That, I think, is the simple reason why this is written in Aramaic, this part. Because that was the language of the Gaul. That was the first Gaulus, that was the major Gaulus, so the Gemara is written in Aramaic. So that is the language of Gaulus. But the rest of the Haggadah is not intended to be that way. The Haggadah itself, it would seem to me, should be written Lashon HaKodesh and Ivrit, because that's Cheres. And the fact that there were times in history when the Jews ceased to speak Lashon HaKodesh because of the exile, you know, that's a tragedy, so to speak, of Jewish history. But the ideal of, especially on this night, should be that it should be in Hebrew, in Lashon HaKodesh. Of course, however, as I mentioned the other day, a person should know what he's saying. So if he doesn't understand what he's saying, he should better say it in English. But the text itself is a Hebrew text. With that in mind, we can understand that we're saying Hashata Hacha, that now we are here, which means that it's a realization that there's something wrong. The program did not work out perfectly. That indeed it did, in the sense that God took us to the land, God brought us to the land, but we were exiled. So you can't ignore that. We're not in the perfect state, because in order to be in the perfect state, in order for the system to be complete. Now, I would say that it's very, very interesting that the Vehevesi is not one of the languages of the Geula, because the essence, and there's a very good reason for that. If it were, then we'd have a very big problem. If being in the land was the essence of Geula, then we'd have a big problem, because then we're not in the land. So that's it. Then there's something lacking. Then you're lacking an essential aspect. So how can you celebrate Pesach? Where's the Cheres?
Cheres is really
in the ideas. But the Cheres means that God freed us from the enslavement, from the physical aspect of the enslavement, also from the psychological aspect. I think that the Vehotesi, there's the physical aspect. Then there's the Hitzalti. Hitzalti means Hatzalah. That is, you can take a person out of the physical aspect of enslavement, but he's not saved. He still has the slave mentality. That's a very, very significant thing. How many peoples were able to overcome a slave mentality and to become a free people, truly free? And then there's the Geula, though. Of course, psychological is one thing, but in terms of the transformation of the person to become an individual who lives a life of Kedusha, that's the Geula. That's a reference to the spiritual, so to speak, aspect. And then you have the ultimate, that we became a nation, that God took us unto Him, that we follow a certain system, the system of Torah, which brings you to the highest level of Kedusha. Those are the essences. Now, once that's the case, you've achieved the true Cheres. Now, being in the land is an additional benefit. So that's what I would say, that you couldn't incorporate that into the four. But it is a kiyum, let's put it this way. I mean, ultimately, to achieve and fulfill all these things on the highest level, you have to have your own land, the land that was designated by Hashem, the land of the Avos, your own society. You have to do so. Now, to the extent that you're not in that society, to that extent, you're going to be lacking. And that's why we say Hashat Ahacha. And also, we realize that ultimately, we have to be there. That you have to explain, so why are we here? If all this is true, so what are we doing in Chutz La'aretz? What happened? So that's the explanation, that the system is such that depends. There is such a thing as galus. But it's only temporary. So Lashon Haba, Bi'arad the Yisrael, is an affirmation. If a person takes the galus as being something permanent, then his whole idea is wrong. So he has to acknowledge that that's only a temporary phenomenon. And Lashon Haba. Because this is dependent upon the will of Hashem. And it could be next year. I mean, once God intervenes, Yeshua is Hashem clarifying that Lashon Haba. It also, of course, expresses our attitude, that that's something we desire. But the Lashon Hashat Avdi, Lashon Haba B'nei Chorin, now we are slaves, and next year we should be free, superficially seems to contradict. Superficially it seems to be saying that we're not free people, and yet we're saying that God, not only did God redeem our fathers, but He redeemed us, and so on and so forth. You see, but it means to say that the degree of freedom, There is a cheres, that any Jew that keeps the Torah, that's aware of the Torah, that's cognizant, no matter where he is, already has achieved a significant degree of freedom, but he should also be cognizant. A free person, you see, part of the nature of a free person is that he's not complacent. Once you have the general idea of where freedom lies, you realize that it's subject to degrees. And you want to strive to achieve the highest level. So in that sense, there's an element of avdus, because since we're in Chutz La'aretz, we're subjected to alien cultures, we're, so to speak, which is very reminiscent of what happened in Egypt, that the Jews in Egypt were affected, and they began to absorb the idolatrous ideas. And that's what the Rambam writes about it, until God intervened, it reached a point where they were on the verge of losing it, that they would never be able to recuperate from that. And then God intervenes and sent Moshe Rabbeinu and so on and so on. And the process of Geula begins. One has to be cognizant of the significance of the effect of alien cultures. So that's Avdi. To the extent that we are not in the best situation of Cheres, to that extent we do have elements of Avdi, of being enslaved. It's a different kind of an enslavement. It's not the same as a person who doesn't have Torah, who doesn't have any idea of freedom. It's a different kind of an enslavement. It's the enslavement of a person who is aware, who does have the capability, and does partake to a certain extent of the mitzvos, of the Torah. But that's a different. That is an enslavement in the inability to access the freedom on its best, on the highest possible level. He's not free to experience the benefit. He's not free to experience the benefits of Torah and to achieve the highest possible level. That's a tragedy also. It's not the same as someone who's lost his freedom completely. That's not what we're saying. It's a different kind of, it's not the way we were in Egypt. But that doesn't matter. In many ways, it could even be more painful, because once a person has a sense of what the good is, and he desires it, but he's held back in certain ways, so that's a painful state of slavery as well. But it's important. Now you see the significance where the Koshel Elio comes in, because that idea of longing for the ultimate geula, and also that absolute trust that there will be the ultimate geula. That's to say, that's the Hallel. That's the Hallel after the Berakas Hamazon. That it's based upon that. That the but it's very, again, it's very important that the Hevesi, if the Hevesi aspect was an essential, so then that's it. It's over. Once you're in Golis, it's over. We're not saying that. Because the Torah is such that wherever you are, it could be observed anywhere. And wherever a person is, to the extent that he participates in Torah, he partakes of the good, and he removes himself from any kind of an enslavement. It's the highest possible life that you can imagine. The only thing is, we also acknowledge that it's not the pristine situation, because for that you need Eretz Yisrael.